With debate number one in the books, and everyone still talking about it, we are joined here in the studio by Ashley DeSena, Orange County conservative and Cruz supporter. So I have to ask, are you Team Cruz or Team Beck now in terms of the
whole thing? A divide.
Oh yeah,
now?
Did you not hear Glenn Beck interviewed Ted Cruz after came out and endorsed Trump?
I did not hear that. Glenn Beck yelled at him
for doing it.
No,
and then apologized to all of his listeners for having endorsed Ted Cruz in the first place.
Oh, seriously?
Yeah, that happened. That was like 2 days ago, I think. I think that was over the weekend.
Yeah, well, of course I knew Cruz did finally endorse Trump, you know, sort of begrudgingly, I suppose,
right.
Half-heartedly. I guess it's just, it's just politics, right? I think that Cruz is facing a little bit of a fight in Texas to retain his Senate seat, so it probably has a lot to do with that.
Yeah. I think Beck's take was, I've never seen Ted Cruz calculate before, and now he clearly is, and that disappointed Glenn Beck.
It is disappointing. I was disappointed as well, but at the same time, not incredibly surprised, although at this point, it's kind of, I don't know, what the calculation is exactly.
Right.
So.
All right. Well, let's get to the debate. So, debate took place last night. What did they say? 81 million people watched it, which is... High.
Apparently. Seems like a large part of the electorate to me.
Yeah, definitely, which is good, I guess, depending on the actual content of the debate that we heard last night. Okay, so my hot take, and let's start with what I think is our point of agreement before we get into anything else. Lester Holt does not get to moderate any other debates again ever
from now on. You didn't think he did a good job?
I started to realize that he wasn't doing a good job when he started by saying, we're going to do this in 15-minute segments.
Oh,
and then they got to the second 15-minute segment about 33 minutes into the...
Right.
Yeah.
Right, right. Yeah, I definitely let them run over time.
A little bit, yeah.
I feel like... And with the interruptions, didn't rein them in very well. But I feel like... From what I've heard from other news sources, he in his world, in the media world, he didn't want to end up like Matt Lauer or somebody. And repeat that story. So I guess I could understand a little bit.
Yeah.
But he could have kept them the pace
a little
up.
Bit more.
It started to drag, really, in the middle. You know, even people who are seriously interested in the minutia of politics and follow it minute by minute on Twitter, like I have been lately, at least, it was just kind of like, okay, all right, come on, let's go. Let's move this
forward,
along.
Yeah.
We have other things to talk about, and I'm sure there are things that he wanted to include that everybody's saying, well, why didn't we hear about this? Why didn't we hear about that? Well, probably because
there's two more debates.
That's true too.
Yeah,
this is
there
just
are
the first
some,
of three.
Right. I will say, I have moderated debates in the past, and these are local debates with Chapel Hill people running against other Chapel Hill people, and I know just from moderating those debates how difficult it can be for a moderator to keep people on time and everything. But then again, I'm not moderating like this big presidential debate with 100 million people watching either.
Sure.
So I don't know
if that
adds to the pressure, but it also adds to the responsibility, I think.
Well, that's absolutely right.
I don't know.
I know there's a whole bunch of back and forth about the moderator and all that before the debate. I didn't pay too much attention to that. So I didn't hear whether Trump or Clinton were satisfied or, after the fact, how they felt about the moderator or anything. Mm-hmm. But I except for keeping them on track, which I guess is what a moderator is supposed to do. He pushed back with some questions and tried to keep them at least answering the questions that were asked. Just let them go on too long.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. So general take on who won. I think Trump won the first 15 minutes and then Clinton took it from there. And I think that's been generally the response that we've gotten.
Yeah. I would say that I agree with that. But I think that first 15-ish, I might extend it a little bit longer, maybe
20 or 30. Yeah, because they were talking about trade there, and that, Trump said afterwards that was his best stuff, and that's true.
Right. I think it sort of dropped off for him around the race relations segment, but, really seriously dropped off. But I think that his first 20 minutes or so was so good that it was enough to sort of balance it out a little bit. I ultimately felt like it was kind of a tie even though I feel like Hillary Clinton was more on target and more detailed for the majority of the debate time itself, but the impact, I'm not quite sure.
Yeah, we'll see
if it was the same level of impact, because when he was good, he was really, really good. Yeah. That's what I'm trying to say.
And I think Trump won the first 15 minutes and Hillary Clinton won the rest for exactly the same reason, which is, and they talked about it in the debate itself. Hillary Clinton spent time preparing for it, whereas Donald Trump really went out of his way to not. But what that means is the first 15 minutes, Hillary Clinton comes off sounding rehearsed. Like, you give her a question and she gives what clearly sounds like a rehearsed answer, and that doesn't sound great in the first 2 minutes of a debate. And then Donald Trump, who had not prepared, got a question and responded immediately to it. So he comes off sounding a lot more genuine in the first few minutes, but then he's flying by his gut the entire way, whereas Clinton is ready for anything. So 60 minutes in, the impact of the preparation versus not preparing starts to shift, I think.
Right.
That was my take on it. I don't know.
I mean, you could tell she practiced, but I think that going into it, everybody thought, rather, that she would come off, though, as really rehearsed. Mm-hmm. So I don't feel like she had anything to lose by not necessarily seeming as authentic or genuine. I didn't think she's probably wise not to compete with Trump on that note, because she could sound like a, you know, sort of academic and really rehearsed, as you were saying, and that sort of thing, and it wasn't going to count against her, because that's what everybody expected from her.
So, speaking with Ashley DeSena again, Orange County Conservative, talking about the Trump-Clinton debate that took place last night. Debate number one of three. So, if you were watching and there was an issue that you wanted them to talk about that they missed, or if you were just disappointed with the whole debate, they've got two more chances, plus the Kane-Pence debate coming up next. Is Kane-Pence is next, and then it's debate number two, right? Is that how it goes?
I don't remember, honest. Okay. It's somewhere in the middle of the vice presidential debate, in the middle.
So let's talk about the specific issues that they talked about. We mentioned trade already. They talked about that. They moved on to foreign policy, then got to race and race relations.
Right.
Sort of a discursus into the birther conspiracy there for a little while. And I know you were disappointed with Lester Holt asking about Trump scandals and not Clinton's. So
which I think is
the fair point.
I think that maybe those are some of the things that he didn't get to. I'm sort of giving them the benefit of the doubt there, but maybe they were going to delve more into Clinton's emails, her Middle East policy when she was Secretary of State, and the ramifications that we're still dealing with now, and that sort of thing, you know, foreign policy. Didn't get to that. Mm-hmm. So hopefully in the next two debates, they'll pay more attention to those things.
What was we've been following this race for, 12 years
forever,
or something like that? Yeah,
forever.
Good God. We're a month and a half away. It's going to be over.
It's hard to believe
soon,
we're already here.
Soon. We're almost there. No, it's it's hard to believe that it's taken us this friggin' long to get here. But anyway, we've been following this issue, talking about all of these these candidates have been talking about these issues for time immemorial. What did we learn anything last night, or was there anything that was said or anything that was discussed or the way it was discussed that allow us to sort of draw distinctions between the two candidates that maybe we wouldn't have been able to draw them that way before?
One of the things that I took away from this, and this is the first time I've realized this, because one of the terms that Hillary invented it for the purposes of the debate, and I feel like it was supposed to be a hashtag, which is this trumped-up trickle-down. Trump loophole, too.
Trump loophole was I hadn't heard that one before. I think I'd heard trumped-up trickle-down.
I don't even remember
before.
What Trump loophole was. The taxes.
The taxes, yeah.
Yeah, that was supposed to refer, because everything's a loophole anyway.
Right.
So trumped-up trickle-down. Is that what it was? I have it written down.
You're right.
But something like that, and that was supposed to describe his economic policy, how he would approach economic growth and creating jobs and that sort of thing. And that was at the very beginning of the debate. And anyway, what I learned was that although she, to me, she's talking about, you know, the way to do that is through government solutions to, quote unquote, invest people's money, which to me is taking your money against your will and using it for whatever, you know, a bureaucrat wants to use it for. And so that's not really investing because it's not voluntary. But it, that they don't, that progressives don't see government solutions as top down solutions, whereas because they castigate people who are pro, you know, free market, they call them, you know, it's trickle down Reaganomics or whatever, which I don't know if any economist has ever really promoted trickle down. I'm not sure that there's such thing. I think it's more of a political term that sounds really good and has been very impactful for the past few decades, I suppose. But they say that's bad because it's a top-down economic policy, but they don't see government solutions as top-down.
I think the argument is that it's bad not because it's top-down, but because it benefits the wealthy at the either at the expense of or at the very least without residual benefits for the middle class and working class.
Yeah, well, you know, I can see when you're saying you're going to cut taxes, right? Like, if you're cutting income taxes in particular, maybe, although maybe not. But if you're cutting taxes, or if it's corporate taxes, income taxes, however you want to put it, the wealthy are going to benefit the most because, you know, the top 1% of income earners pay 24% of federal income tax. Mm-hmm. So, of course, they're paying the most money. So they're going to get to keep the most money if you cut the taxes, whereas you have half of the people who are not paying anything. So of course they're not going to get any money back. They haven't contributed any money, that are at the lower half of the income scale. But, I think that all that the issue I have with that is that, it's picking an industry, like Hillary Clinton talked in particular about solar industry and saying we're going to invest your money here and then that's going to stimulate the economy, it's going to give people jobs, it's going to do this, that, and the other. And I don't see that that's really any different. I mean, there are differences, of course, because it's, you know, it's corporatism, it's protectionism, it's favoring one particular type of energy industry over another. I'd rather there be no subsidies whatsoever for any type of energy or any company at all. And that's supposed to have the same effect that, you know, people that would promote a more of a free market would want to cut taxes. Of course, if you cut taxes, you have to cut government spending as well, or you just run up huge deficits, and that doesn't work either. And that's what we've seen throughout a lot of recent conservative administrations. They haven't cut spending to compensate. So, you know, that was just sort of an enlightening moment for me. I feel like that. Whenever you hear about government solutions, the people promoting those don't think of them as a top-down solution, but yet they don't favor what they perceive to be a top-down solution, which is cutting taxes for the wealthy. But of course, they're tax cuts for the wealthy because the wealthy are the ones who pay the most taxes. But in reality, those
the most
tax
income
cuts
taxes
benefit.
And corporate taxes and estate taxes, right? Like there are other taxes that, and this is one of the concerns that I had with Trump's tax plan is that he wants to cut or eliminate the estate or keep the estate tax eliminated and cut income taxes and corporate taxes. He talked about the VAT tax with Mexico, and shouldn't we do something like that, adding it, talking about taxing imports coming into the country and putting taxes on sales, which are all increasing the price of goods that everyone buys. is for the same amount of money, whether you make $20,000 a year or $2 million a year, and those would disproportionately affect lower income people.
Sure, yeah,
and
that's
why I
don't
favor that. And
he wants
to raise those taxes.
Right, right. Well, that's why I don't like Trump's economic policy.
Oh, okay, all right.
No, I don't like those types of tariffs either. I mean, I think that we are a nation and we should have borders and we should enforce that. But as far as trade goes, I think that we're all made better off in the long run by having as free trade as we can across nations, because that's just, you know, that diversifies the economy and that makes the quality of life better for less money, as you were saying, because you're not artificially inflating the price with costly tariffs. Mm-hmm. You know, that's protectionism. But at the same time, yeah, it would be nice if we could cut corporate taxes so the companies wouldn't leave and take their jobs with them in the first place.
Speaking with Ashley DeSena, Orange County Conservative, we got like tons of things that we can talk. Kind of the same as with Trump and Clinton themselves. Like, they got tons of issues to talk about, and they need three debates in order to do it. And you know, they're not going to even get to half of the issues that they should
probably
talk about.
Probably not.
But,
no.
But I want to mention this, and I just wanted to just give you my take on this, and just see how you respond to this. The one thing that really jumped out at me from the debate, and we haven't talked about foreign policy yet, but Trump made a reference to Douglas MacArthur. Do you remember this? Like, sort of a throwaway point at the very end, but I think it's really telling. He was talking about Clinton on her website with her detailed description for how to fight ISIS.
Oh.
And the line was, she tells you how to fight ISIS on her website. I don't think General Douglas MacArthur would like that too much. And the point that he was making was, I don't want to give you specific detailed plans. I wanted to keep things close to my chest so that the enemy doesn't know, etc. But I think the reference to MacArthur is really, really telling, because he doesn't, you know, he could have said Norman Schwarzkopf wouldn't have liked that much. Or if you wanted to go back to World War II, he could have said Patton or someone like that. But he specifically refers to MacArthur. And I think it's a really, really telling reference, because Douglas MacArthur was great World War II general, very strong, all about shows of strength. But he had a lot of the weaknesses that Donald Trump has as a campaigner and possibly as an executive, which is overconfidence, tendency to underestimate his opposition. MacArthur ran headfirst into wars because he just assumed he could win them with a show of strength. And sometimes that worked, and sometimes he ended up getting himself stuck in situations, and this was the problem with Korea, that he couldn't get out of. He was a publicity hound. He couldn't stop his mouth from running when there were reporters in the room. And ironically, that he refers to MacArthur here in terms of not giving away secrets, because MacArthur's one of his great weaknesses in Korea was that he actually did telegraph his moves to the enemy, just because of the publicity visits that he would make to Korea. He would schedule those and they would be publicly on the schedule so that everyone knew when there was going to be a major movement in Korea, because MacArthur was going there. And all of that bombast and overconfidence and ambition is what gets us stuck in a quagmire in Korea until MacArthur gets pushed out. Mm-hmm. And Matthew Ridgway, who is his successor, comes in, takes over, and rights the ship. And we don't hear about Matthew Ridgway because he wasn't a publicity hound. He was just the guy who quietly went in there and got the job done. And I just really see that as the 2016 election. You've got this big bombastic guy who says, I can win everything with just a big show of strength, and ends up getting us stuck in big problems that we can't pull ourselves out of. And then you've got on the other side the person who just goes in and takes care of business.
I don't see it that way.
I had a feeling you wouldn't. I think it's a good analogy, but
I think that's very insightful interpretation of his MacArthur remark, because I didn't make a whole lot of it.
Yeah.
I mean, not into that depth.
I wouldn't have, but I just read The 50s by David Halberstam, where he has several chapters devoted to it. So
sure. No, I think that's, there's probably a lot to that aside from just the, you know, not telegraphing your intentions, which is all I read into it. I feel more worried about Hillary Clinton as far as foreign policy goes, which sounds probably ridiculous to some people. They talked a lot about temperament in the debate, but I feel as if Trump is actually more apt to not engage in foreign wars. And if he can just appear over the course of the debates as less and less dangerous as they go on, then that's huge. I mean, I think that more than anything else would work to his advantage, because for all of Hillary's personal life issues, as well as the email scandal and that sort of thing, there still is this trust that she has experience. I might agree with Trump when he said, well, it's 30 years of bad experience. But
to which she responded, no, it's 26 years of bad experience.
Yeah,
I don't know if that was your best response, but
she's,
yeah.
You know, not that old, I guess. But so I think that part of that experience, though, why I think it's bad experience is because she has was partially responsible anyway for leading us into wars in the Middle East that has destabilized it even more than it already was. And so I think that sort of, I don't see why she would change that approach if she became president.
I do think you're totally right about Trump just needing to convince Americans that he's not as dangerous as they may think he is right now. I think one of the two statistics from polling data that have come out to me, not in the last 24 hours, but just all year long, that have just really stood out as just an indication of how polarized we are, I guess, are that I think Barack Obama's approval rating is like 95% among people who don't believe he's a secret Muslim. And on the flip side of that, like 90% of people who don't think Donald Trump, who think Donald Trump can be trusted with nuclear weapons, will vote for Donald Trump in the election. So literally all he has to do is convince people that he can be trusted to be in the same room with a nuclear bomb, and he'll probably win. I don't know if he's going to do that,
but I
think that's the challenge.
I agree. I completely agree. And I don't know. What do you think the challenge for Hillary is at this point? I mean, she's marked off a lot of boxes.
Yeah.
But there's still, of course, the issue of trust, though, despite what I just said about her having a lot of experience, and people are, you know, impressed by that. But what's her challenge?
I think it's trust. I think it's likability. And I think it's doing the thing that she did do successfully last night, which is getting up on stage and presenting herself as just sort of more competent and more even-keeled than Donald Trump. I think she's doing that really well. Trust and likability are her other two challenges.
Right.
Right?
Yeah. No, I think so. I mean, I didn't expect you to say this, but I'm pleased you didn't say that, you know, because she's female. You know, I think, like, by and large, a lot of people are over that.
Yeah.
I feel like her supporters that are just like, well, she's got this extra challenge in the debates, you know, as a woman, first woman president.
I don't think she's allowed to make as many mistakes because she's a female. And this is like, or for some reason, because, I mean, she took a really big hit for getting sick, for instance, which I think if Donald Trump had come down with pneumonia, he wouldn't have seen such a big hit in the polls.
Well, I think it was because of the extended lies about it. Like, if they just said, oh, she has pneumonia, it's really bad, she needs to take a couple weeks off, everybody would have understood.
But then why does she cover that up? It's because she has to present herself as strong as humanly possible.
I
think that does have a little bit to do with with being a woman. Like, I don't think that's her biggest challenge. I think that's in there. I don't know.
Right. But, well, the different versions of her health, the different stories that came out from her campaign didn't help her likability or trustworthiness.
Right, right.
So ultimately, unfortunately, I think it may have backfired if she was worried about the perception that she's female. Therefore, she has to appear stronger. I'm not sure. I mean, I think everybody knows Hillary Clinton is pretty tough, and she'd do just about anything to be president. So I don't know. I feel like that's not necessarily the challenge that some commenters have made it out to be, but we'll see if it keeps coming up in the debates.
We got to wrap it up. It's almost the end of the hour. Ashley DeSena, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you.